You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
I'm reporting live for WFHB, this is Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, June 12th, 2017.
The data tells us that they're 5 times more likely to have hepatitis C than other adults.
Public health officials are urging baby boomers to get tested for hepatitis C. We'll have more later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report. Also coming up the next half hour, we hear from a volunteer at Bloomington Community Orchard on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
The Bloomington Police Department has hired more police to patrol downtown, following the recommendations of a task force assembled by Mayor John Hamilton. Police Chief Michael Dekoff reportedly told the Herald Times the four extra officers would focus attention on drug use, fighting, and public consumption of alcohol. Dekoff has not responded to a request for comment from WFHB. In recent years, Dekoff has repeatedly said he doesn't believe Bloomington can, quote, arrest ourselves out of this problem, unquote, referring to issues surrounding poverty and nuisance crimes downtown. Police have already held what they call roll call at People's Park, a place frequented by people experiencing homelessness. Roll call is where as many as 20 officers assemble at the beginning of a shift. Although the increased police presence was recommended by the mayor's task force, the hire of more police has not been debated in public meetings.
Governor Eric Holcomb has appointed Judge Christopher Goff to the Indiana Supreme Court, filling the vacancy left by Justice Robert Rucker's departure earlier this year. Justice Rucker had been the longest-serving justice on the court, and he was the second Black justice to be nominated in the court's history. Judge Goff's nomination means that, for the first time since 1999, no racial minorities are serving on the court. Indiana's Judicial Nominating Commission, which is headed by Chief Justice Loretta Rush, chose Judge Goff and two others as the finalists for Judge Rucker's seat. The other finalists were Judge Vicki Carmichael of Clark County and Judge Matthew Kincaid of Boone County. Judge Goff is a current resident of Wabash and graduated from the Maher School of Law in 1996. He has been a Wabash Superior Court judge since 2005 and spent 2 years as the Huntington County Public Defender prior to that appointment. In his private life, Judge Goff is married with 4 children and is a 5-time finisher of the Huntington Ultra Frigid 50K Trail Run. During his time in the Wabash Superior Court, Judge Justice Goff launched several new programs. The county added a new drug court and 3 problem-solving courts, all aimed at directing offenders into drug treatment and other rehabilitative programs as an alternative to incarceration.
Governor Eric Holcomb has appointed 2 new members to the Indiana University Board of Trustees. These new trustees are Harry L. Gonzo, an Indianapolis attorney and former IU trustee, and Zachary Arnold, a medical student at the IU School of Medicine in Muncie. In addition to the new trustee members, Holcomb has also appointed Michael J. Miro, a cardiologist from Fort Wayne, who will now be starting his 2nd 3-year term on the board. The IU Board of Trustees is made up of 8 members and 1 student member. 6 of the members are appointed by the state governor, while IU degree holders select the other 3 members. All members serve 3-year terms on the Board of Trustees except the student trustee, who serves a 2-year term. These new trustees will begin their appointments with the board on August 10th and 11th.
This Thursday, June 15th, will mark the 12th annual National Dump the Pump Day. In observance of the day, Bloomington Transit will be offering free rides for all fixed-route buses and BT access services. Dump the Pump Day dates back to 2006, when gas prices were $3 per gallon. Though gas prices have gone down since then, National Dump the Pump Day is still a way of informing the public about public transportation. According to a press release by Bloomington Transit, every $1 invested in public transit results in approximately $4 in economic returns for the the city. Route and schedule information is available at 336-RIDE or at bloomingtontransit.com.
The city of Bloomington has accumulated $3.9 million in unspent funds from last year, and officials are now making plans for how to spend about two-thirds of that money. City Controller Jeff Underwood has requested that $2.7 million of the savings, or reversions, be appropriated for projects across a wide range of city departments. In a city council meeting last week, Underwood said the largest chunk, $1.783 million, will be spent on equipment.
That includes vans for animal shelter, replacing two of our large dump truck snow removals, two solar signboards, and then equipment for various departments like risk management, parks, facilities, and several other departments.
The reverted monies will pay for more than trucks and vans. The appropriation request also includes funding for a variety of projects, including a parking study, a salary study, updating the Unified Development Ordinance, parks equipment, and arts grants. The appropriation includes a request from Mayor Hamilton's administration for an architect. Council member Chris Sturbaum asked Underwood to explain.
We've had a team of people working, including ESD, Planning and Transportation, Parks Department, Controller's Office, Legal, and the Mayor's Office, reviewing that need. And really, it's comprehensive, will be a comprehensive master agreement for architect and some planning services throughout the city.
Underwood said a team is already interviewing architecture firms. Because the city has a wide range of needs, Underwood said the allocation provides for retaining more than one architecture firm in an effort to get a range of expertise. $80,000 of the reverted money will go toward a comprehensive parking study requested by the mayor's office and the parking commission. Half the cost of that study will come from funds generated by parking meters. Underwood said $1.2 million of the savings is yet to be allocated. He expects to come back to the council in August with another funding request for equipment replacement. Underwood also noted the importance of holding on to some of the reverted money. He says even if the additional appropriations are approved, the city will maintain almost 5 months of funding in reserve. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. According to the Centers for Disease Control, baby boomers, those born between 1945 and 1965, are five times more likely to have hepatitis C than other populations. A chronic hepatitis C infection can cause liver damage. In fact, the disease is the leading cause of liver cancer and liver transplants, according to the CDC. I spoke about hepatitis C with Penny Caudill, the administrator of the Monroe County Health Department, for today's WFHB Community Report. There's been a push in the public health community over the last 5 to 7 years encouraging baby boomers to get tested for hepatitis C. The Indiana State Department of Health reports a 400% increase in the number of acute hepatitis C cases since 2010. Department of Health figures also indicate a spike in infection rates in people born between 1952 and 1971. Another tidbit, most of these new infections documented in 2015 statewide were among men. South Central and Southeastern Indiana counties are driving Hep C rates, notably in Scott County, where needle sharing among IV drug users led to an outbreak of hepatitis C and HIV in 2015. Here in Monroe County, officials confirmed 78 cases of hepatitis C just last year. IV drug use is certainly one driver of Hep C infection rates, but it's not the only way someone can contract the disease. I spoke with Penny Caudill, administrator at the Monroe County Health Department, about hepatitis C and why it's important for boomers to get tested. Would you explain why baby boomers are the target of a campaign promoting testing for hepatitis C?
Sure. Well, people born between 1945 and 65, or as we refer to them as baby boomers, are a group that we are seeing stark increases in terms of hepatitis C. So the data tells us that they're five times more likely to have hepatitis C than other adults. And that could be for various reasons. So we don't know exactly why that baby boomer generation is most at risk. But if you think about the past, we didn't always have universal precautions. We didn't have a lot of the information and the education, even in the 60s and 70s, that we gained in the late 80s and the early 90s and today. So you know, the belief is that it's more about maybe what we didn't know.
What activities increase the risk of someone getting hepatitis C?
Well, just in general, and keep in mind that new cases are coming a lot because of injection drug use. So I kind of want to talk about what today we're seeing as well as what may have put people at risk in the past. But it's a bloodborne infection, so it is passed through getting into someone's blood. So that could be former injection drug users, even if they only used it once and it was, you know, long, long time ago. It could be people who got clotting factor concentrates before 1987, or blood transfusions before July of 92 when we started having better testing of the blood. So along with those kinds of things, but we have transmission that comes from injection drug use, recipient of donated blood prior to good screenings. Needle stick injuries in healthcare settings can be a part of that, although I have to say that the risk in those circumstances is relatively low, and it is possible for an infected mother to pass hepatitis C when she delivers baby.
I read that hepatitis C is 10 times more infectious than HIV. Is that true?
It is. Hepatitis in general is, it lives longer, for instance, in dried bloods and takes less to infect you. So yes, it is easier to transmit than HIV is.
Is this a disease that has obvious symptoms?
Well, it can have symptoms, certainly, but they're pretty kind of typical. Fever, fatigue, dark urine, oftentimes for hepatitis, anything with the liver. So that could be true of other types of hepatitis. So there are other viruses, abdominal pain, loss of appetite, nausea, vomiting, you know, jaundice. So those may or may not occur. They may come and go. So it can be difficult, and it can, people may not realize that they've been infected. And that's why they're encouraging people to get tested if they don't know.
If you haven't been tested and you are infected with hepatitis C, how long would you carry the infection before actually seeing debilitating symptoms? And then how long before there's actual liver damage?
After exposure, some people will develop symptoms within 4 to 12 weeks is typical, the average time. It can take longer than that. Some people will clear the infection on their own. That is a possibility. Some will develop chronic hepatitis C. Of every 100 people infected with hepatitis C virus, about 75 to 85 people will develop chronic hepatitis C infection. And then of those, 60 to 70 people will go on to develop chronic liver disease. 5 to 20 people will go on to develop cirrhosis over a period of 20 to 30 years. And 1 to 5 people will die from cirrhosis or liver cancer. So it certainly can have horrible long-term effects. So we want people to get tested so that they know what their treatment options are. Treatment has improved, although it's extremely expensive. And so if you know that you're infected, then you can talk with your healthcare provider about what your options are. Our biggest concern about Hep C, I mean, we want people who may not know they're infected and are to know, and so we want people tested. But like I said, we're very concerned about people who are most at risk right now, and new cases of hepatitis C are more likely to come from people who are using injection drugs.
Where do folks go to get tested? I mean, they can request this from their primary care physician, but is it also available through the public health clinic?
Primarily, they need to see their healthcare provider. Indiana Recovery Alliance is doing some hepatitis C testing as part of the syringe services program. If they have HIV, they can talk with their case manager, their care coordinator, and there are other, you know, entities that may at certain times be able to offer it, but may not always. So our disease intervention specialists may, for certain clients, be able to do that. They don't do it just on a walk-in basis for anybody.
Penny, is there anything else we should know?
No, I think we just all need to be aware that, you know, hepatitis C is a concern, and if you don't know what your status is, and especially if you're in that baby boomer age or you have, you're taking risks, you know, like injection drug use that would put you at high risk, then it makes sense to get tested, find out what your status is so that you can get information about treatment and follow-up. And if you're not infected, then you can learn more about how you can protect yourself going forward.
So the protections would be?
Certainly, if you're an injection drug user, you know, clean needles and materials, you know, work and not, you know, when we talk about harm reduction, it's about hepatitis C, it's about HIV. It is also about just general avoiding staph infection or other types of infections that you might get from using dirty equipment. So we want people to be as safe as possible. And hopefully, you know, when people are ready, we can get help get them into treatment. But we want people to be safe in the meantime.
Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
I am Stephen Hale, and I volunteer with Bloomington Community Orchard. I've been a volunteer there for about 5 years now. I serve on the operations team, as well as being board chair. For me, there is an orchard experience. I describe it as being a connection between people, a place, and growing food. The experience, it's a set of conversations that I have with people. Some people I just meet one time, but people from all kinds of backgrounds, different ages, different cultures, they all have their stories about, we used to grow food in my grandmother's garden, or something that they do in their own home, or something like that that means a lot to them. And as we're turning compost or pulling weeds or doing the other things we do, these stories come out and it seems to be universal and it really pulls me in and keeps me coming back. One of the areas where I know that it makes a difference, as well as where I have a lot of fun, is programs with children. And we do things with lotus blossoms, children planting seeds, and then we'll also have tours with children coming around the orchard site. There was a moment a couple of years ago, I'm guessing the children were 7, 8 years old, somewhere in that range. And it was April, maybe going into May, so the blossoms on the apple trees were starting to fall off, but the fruit was just starting. And I could point out, you see this little swelling at the end of the branch? That's going to be an apple. This boy was standing right next to it and was like, no way! And then he stopped talking, and you could almost hear the wheel spinning. And in that moment, he really made the connection, the flower, the pollinating, you know, the birds and bees stuff, and he got it. To me, that's just an example of what we do and what people take away with. There are many ways to be involved with Bloomington Community Orchard. We have weekly, we call them work and learn days. They're 3 hours, either on Saturday afternoons or in the summer Wednesday evenings. And people can just come out, if you're there for the first time, see what's out there, see what we have going on, and help us get some things done. That's, I think, often how people first get connected. There's just lots of ways for people to get involved, to have an impact with the Orchard organization and with the community. Thanks for listening. I'm Stephen Hale with Bloomington Community Orchard.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County. For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three featured volunteer opportunities for the week. Assist visitors at Bloomington Parks and Recreation's second annual Bug Fest at the Hilltop Garden and Nature Center on June 24th. Participants will go on an insect safari, make a craft, and participate in a mealworm race or cricket spitting contest. Two shifts are available. Or use your expertise to further benefit the Pets Alive nonprofit spay-neuter clinic and join the dedicated and passionate animal lovers from across the community on their board or committees. Board and committee members meet once a month for about an hour. And finally, participate in a Bloomington tradition. The Bloomington Playwrights Project's Arts Fair on the Square on June 17th is celebrating 37 years of bringing visual artists and craftspeople together on the picturesque grounds of the Monroe County Courthouse. Many shifts and assignments are available. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Maggie Bowie, Jared Dill, and Joe Crawford, along with myself, Sarah Vaughn, for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. I also produced today's feature.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Michael Glab. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
And if you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.